You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent magazine for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers and leaders. Each episode, we bring you behind-the-scenes coaching, news analysis, exclusive interviews, technology and more to help you list more, sell more and elevate your results. To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe. Here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Hey, Samantha McLean from Elite Agent. Ray White. It all started in 1902 in a shed in Crow's Nest, Queensland, about 50 kilometres north of Toowoomba. Since then, over the last 116 years, Ray White has become a household name and a global business with an annual turnover in excess of $27 billion. As part of this year's Ray White Connect conference in August, delegates were invited to visit the shed and the White family kindly allowed Elite Agent to be part of this gathering, inviting us to spend time with the current joint chairman of the company, Brian White and Paul White, who are the sons of Alan White and the grandsons of Ray White. As both men are not fans of self-promotion and are normally pretty reserved, this was a very rare opportunity for us to document an amazing Australian business story. It was a walk through history that I will certainly never forget, covering Ray's start, how Alan invigorated the business after the war, the expansion south, plus many more incredible lessons for real estate agents today. From the time we spent with Brian and Paul, we created three videos which you might have seen in the brief this week. But we know some of you are more fans of audio than video, so this week we had the whole interview for you delivered as a podcast. I hope you enjoy this yarn as much as we enjoyed our day with the White family in the Darling Downs, where it all began. Can you describe the original business of Ray White as it was here in this shed?
Well, it was mixed business. Like he had a business where he sold machinery, he sold livestock, and he sold property, and basically whatever he could sell. So that's what he did. He was an agent, and a true sense of the word in the country town. He worked for the local people, helping them sell whatever they needed to sell or buy, and he particularly involved in the farming industry.
He clearly was an entrepreneur, and he just went out and said, right, this is my community, how can I help them? What things do they need? What am I able to provide? And that led to a broadening range of services, including even providing insurance or organising insurance. That's a big spread. It all came out of this office.
What do you feel would have been going on in this building? Who would have been coming and going from this building?
It's often hard to remember or realise that this was actually in a railway siding. The end of the railway line from Toowoomba, trains came and shunted, and every terminus of a railway line needs sheds to put stuff in that comes off the train. There was a business centre in Crow's Nest, a row of shops and offices, where his competitors were located. He was not in the town. He was quite on the peripheral. And he had to make a presence and prove himself. He didn't, he would have started with very little capital, probably no capital.
Yeah.
Just opened up a door here and then tried to do some things.
The culture of auction, or Ray White's culture of auction, was born because of your grandfather's love of it. Can you explain how that came about?
The big thing that Ray had was the pig auctions here in Crow's Nest, and this was very much a dairying area, and in those days they separated the milk. The cream went off to Toowoomba to be made into butter, and the separated milk, which was of no real value to humans, was used for feeding pigs and young pigs, and then they'd have their pig auction in the centre of town. And Ray was one of the major auctioneers for that. And we can still see the pig yards with Ray's name on it and everything like that. So the pig day was a big day in town. It was right in the centre of town. And one of the things that the byproduct of pigs is they do smell a bit. So the shops used to shut on pig day.
Yeah.
And till after the sale was finished. And I guess that's the big part of his auctioneering, was in those pig yards. And then it became calves and And I guess he moved on to all sorts of things that he auctioned.
At one point, he decided to specialise in real estate.
He moved to Brisbane about 20 years after he started here. So he was only a young man in his early 20s when he opened here. So he moved to Brisbane in his sort of middle age, you know, mid-40s. A big step, you know, Brisbane must have seemed huge. And he went in then as a real estate agent exclusively. So that was a culmination of increasing confidence from what he had achieved here. The contacts he had confidence that he was able to develop a following and a community of clients. So he wouldn't have been able to specialise when he was here in real estate. It just wasn't big enough.
Yeah.
So it was Brisbane in the early 20s, and he moved into a number of different buildings. He was fortunate to be given the leasing rights to a brand new building next to the GPO, which he then branded his business as Next GPO. It's amazing you don't use GPO in your sort of terminology anymore today. A huge part of his life was the exhibition, which is held once a year for a week in Brisbane. Country people come, and that was his big marketing opportunity. Even though he was in Brisbane, he still made a lot of sales in the country.
Mm. He had a big following for his marketing, didn't he? He was quite clever and creative in the way that he marketed not just his business but property as well. Are there any that stand out as memories for you, any ads he had in the paper or anything like that?
He was an incredible personality. A little story where I was learning to drive and I was driving his car with him in it. He took the courage to let me drive. Anyway, I had an accident down in the Brisbane Valley with a tram, and the tram was jammed up against the side of my car, Ray's car. And I thought, my God, Ray's going to be off his head. And the policeman came, and in those days they had numbers on their epaulettes, and he could tell by the number that he was new in town. He said, "You're new in town, aren't you, sir?" And the policeman said, "Yes, I just arrived." And he said, "Have you bought a house yet?" Here I was terrified that Ray would be upset with me, but he took the opportunity to make a sale. And I guess that summed him up in a lot, that he always had that entrepreneurial feel that, you know, anything that happened, there's obviously a chance for some business to come out of it.
What are your memories of your grandfather, Brian?
Well, I remember him, you know, as a classic grandfather, used to love telling stories, and he had a very unique way of speaking. And there was a particular character called Tommy Dodge that seemed to be central in all his stories. And I had the pleasure of using that character with my children and even my grandchildren. And even some of my grandchildren refer, well, actually, one of their dogs is called Tommy Dodge. So that character has continued for a very long time. But I particularly remember him for just stories, quite a few. The one that stands out particularly was his love of the Gold Coast. He had a property on the Gold Coast, and he talked a lot about the Gold Coast. And I can remember he taking me for my first surf as a very young boy. And he was sort of getting on then. It was, you know, what didn't happen for very long, but that was very a wonderful memory.
This shed that we're in is more than 100 years old and quite unique in that respect, but when it was originally located down in the rail yards, it was lost to the family for some time. How did you go about finding it and getting it back?
We knew it would be around here somewhere. It had been shifted and was found on a property. Some people came and let us know it was found on a property being used as a hay shed.
You put ads in the local paper.
Yeah, and we had to buy it off this farmer.
He knew what it was? He knew what he was sitting on?
Not particularly.
Well, you could see the paintwork was still there, very faint.
Yeah.
Amazing, after 100 years, the paintwork was
still there.
Quite legible, yeah. And all the subsequently they've just, you know, just been really dolling up what was already there.
Its location here now in Crow's Nest, how did you settle on that?
Well, this is the historic village. This is already here.
Yeah.
And we added to the village with this.
It's fantastic what the local villages have done.
Fantastic.
I haven't seen anything in Queensland to rival this.
You know, the old butcher shops, that, you know, all the different shops that they've, and buildings that they've put here. And this is, we added to it with this. And then we bought the house that they lived in, our grandfather and our father and two aunties and uncle. And when it came up for sale, we had to buy it, and which we didn't. And bought it down, settled it here. So we're very much part of the historic village, but the historic village is so well run and it's so terrific what they've done anyway.
There's a lot of the Ray White family coming here today ahead of Connect, and from what I can gather, that nobody passes up a chance to come here. What does this place mean to you and the people of Ray White?
It's our roots, you know, it's our tree of knowledge, is the, you know, it's where it all started. And what we find with our franchisees and salespeople, they just, you know, they're promoting the identity, but to be where it actually started is something very unique. You know. I'm quite lucky that way that we have it, you know. My father, or our father, used to say, in this building, when he used to come in here as a young lad, he'd hear them talking and talking, and but they're always asking somebody to do something, to sell something, to buy something, to do something. And such a great lesson to agents, you know. You've got to get people to do something.
So Ray decided to move the business to Brisbane. Why do you think he left Crow's Nest to head to the big city?
I think it was schooling, really.
Yeah, it was give the kids a better opportunity than staying here. And which I think is a huge part of all migration, isn't it? I mean, he basically migrated to Brisbane. And but the, you know, there's a long story for his family even to get to Crow's Nest in the first place. They stayed in Hobart and they moved out to different parts of Queensland. And you know, a lot of that's all due to opportunities and so forth. So we believe, and that's, he always said that I just want to give my kids really good opportunities.
And so Alan, that's your father, Alan, didn't immediately go into the business, but I have seen photos of the two of you attending auctions with your father as kids. What was that like?
Well, it was a big day. Those were sort of where you're actually, he'd be auctioning an estate. You might have 30 different blocks of land. And our job was to be the runner. You know, he'd write the name of the buyer and the price, and he'd tear the sheet out, sort of thing. And Paul and I had to run up to the office that was there and have to get the processing happening, the contracts and so forth. So, but it just remembered always this massive activity, wasn't there? People talking and moving around and excited and got the land we want and, you know, we're going to build the house, and others disappointed. Very memorable.
Yeah, it was. It was sort of during that real growth in Brisbane, these subdivisions, as Brian's saying, were put up as a lot, you know, well, individually, but at the same time, and auctioned off. Alan had auctioned all day and he'd come home with his croaky voice, and he loved making our eyes water because he'd talk to us.
Then the war came and your father went to war. So your father's real entry into the business was after he came back from the war. Tell us what you both remember of that.
Well, I think it's important to remember that during the war years, all businesses virtually shrunk back to their cell. You know, the army took over buildings and took over all the people. So business just disappeared during the war. So when Alan came into the business post the war, the business almost needed complete rejuvenation. And Alan, of course, was the right man in the right place and at the right time. Sometimes our father isn't given the due recognition he deserves, because he rejuvenated this business, created a fantastic platform. And I always say that was a job then for Paul and I then to jump on that platform. But it was, you know, from a business in Brisbane, he became arguably the market leader in Brisbane, certainly one of the very peak businesses. And the opportunities were there to really seize that and go from there.
What do you remember, Paul, of Alan's early days in Brisbane?
Well, I remember, you know, particularly dinner at home, you know, my mother and father and Brian and I having dinner and the phone ringing, the food, his meal going into the oven, and we spent the rest of the meal together while he was talking, because of no mobile phones, it's all, you know, done at night, a lot of the phone calls. And yeah, he worked hard, you know, put the effort in.
Your own journeys, you both went to school in Brisbane and then went to the University of Queensland.
Paul loved the land.
Yeah.
So Paul couldn't wait to go out Jackaroo and going on the land.
Yeah. That was my life.
At what point, Brian, did you then, or who decided it was the right time for you to join the business?
Well, it's always a terrific question for all young people, what do you do and so forth. And joining the business was always an option. There was never an expectation. But at the end of my university, I thought, well, yeah, why not try it? Yeah, there's no harm in trying it. And the joy in being in a family business is pretty hard to describe. It just fits nicely. And so it was easy. I never really ever considered anything else.
What was your first job?
Collecting rent.
You were a property manager, kind of.
Property manager, collecting rent and making sure the rent was. Because you didn't, you know, those days, even checks were not that frequent. You know, people would come in and pay cash, or you'd have to go out and collect rent. And, you know, you didn't want to have the same sort of schedule, because people know when you're coming, so they wouldn't be home. So you sort of almost come at a different time each week or something, because that was one of the jobs, you know, rent was to be collected. Some people were very nice to send money in, some people had the checkbooks. But, you know, physically collecting rent was part of the business.
How long did you collect the rent for?
Oh, well, then I went into property management and sort of a bit more controlled. When I was in my late 20s, I actually opened an office, which was our fifth office. And that was in the south side of Brisbane, our first office south of the river. So I had that experience, you know, right from a young age to open an office, which is all those offices were company-owned offices. So, wow, that was an experience. I was very much involved in the, prior to that, in the leasing of the new generation office buildings. Sort of post the war, all the banks were building new headquarters, the life insurance companies. We were fortunate in getting a lot of those appointments. So, you know, there's a lot of different things I was involved in.
And so your love of the land led you?
I became a jackaroo, and I worked on, you know, large properties throughout Queensland, particularly riding horses and chasing cattle. That was my love. But, you know, sort of learned how to manage properties and learned the intricacies of, you know, trying to make a rural property work. And then had the opportunity to buy a property in the Western Darling Downs here in Queensland, which ran for a number of years. And at one point I was ready to change. Talking to Brian and Alan, and I said, "Dog, why don't you come with us?" And so I went to Townsville, and we opened an office in Townsville. And it was on the 7th of the 7th, 77, I remember clearly. And that's how I got into the property business. I was very much involved in just in the selling of property, residential, whatever. And then, but when I say my love, which was rural property specialist. And so we started a rural network, very small. Now it's quite a big part of the rural industry in Australia.
I see a lot of memorabilia in Ray White named after Alan, the Alan White Elite Performers and things like that. What's the biggest lesson from both of you that your father passed to you?
Oh, there's it's a number. of course, that we are responsible for the business, responsible for the standard of services that we offer. How committed are we? He was completely committed. If you're not committed, don't do it. Respect for the people you have and attempt to understand the principles of leadership.
And you know, the big thing that I think we had is, you know, we'd rather not do a deal than do a deal that was not right for the client, which eventually would be not right for us anyway. And that ethical sort of standard is something in our DNA, seems to be.
The move south from Brisbane to into New South Wales, who was it that decided it was time to expand south of the border?
I think we all had ambitions, didn't we? And
well, if we didn't expand, the word southerner was a terrifying word. And it's hard to describe it. They're like the Huns. The southerners are coming, because it was all just Brisbane-based businesses. Suddenly the southerners, and this is sort of, you know, really from the 1980s onwards, sort of they're appearing. We didn't have a future if we weren't national. So we could expand and fail, but we might succeed, or we can do nothing and fail. It was like a reverse. People say, gee, you must have had a terrific conference. No, I was terrified. What the hell is going to happen? How are we going to make it? And probably being like that made you work twice as hard. There's no complacency.
What were some of the challenges you faced in moving south or taking on the southerners, let's say?
Well, the brand recognition, what didn't exist. And in the early days, people would say, oh, thanks. Oh, by the way, I'm leaving to go to one of our other, you know, competitors. And no one knows the brand. You know, Ray Who. And we branded our company Ray White Real Estate for a long time, just for people to know what it was. And it's funny how we end up with some extraordinary personal support stories. You know, you look back now and you can think of so many names of those guys that were absolutely critical in us becoming, enabling us to establish ourselves and establish our relevance. And it's sort of it's a bit shock to realise now, you know, sometimes hard to talk and say, hey, you know, people didn't understand, we're in New Zealand. We've got a fantastic business in New Zealand now, as Ray White. You know, they're, you know, Ray, who? But time passes and good things happen.
Paul, you were instrumental in the franchising model of Ray White. What were the early days like when you started offering franchises to other people?
Well, we were a company-owned operation and we didn't really believe in, well, we didn't believe that franchising would get the best. And we were talked into it by a couple of guys from Carina in Brisbane to let them have a franchise, and they'd show us what they could do, and we all went, well, they outsold our company offices 2-1. We all sat around, didn't we, and go, how could this possibly be? And it didn't take us long to realise that people have the desire to own their own business rather than working. And that's when it took us down the franchising trail. And we franchised all our own offices to our operators and then encouraged people to join us as well. And that's when the momentum sort of got started. We bought a small business called ERA, which Brian was instrumental in buying. It was in New South Wales, particularly some in Queensland. And that helped us break into the New South Wales market, into Sydney particularly. We picked up some very strong people who are still with us today. And we went through the stock exchange crash in the late 80s. And that may have been a very big thing for us because everybody swung their money into property and the market took off. And people wanted an identity. And so, yeah, it was, lots of things came together at the same time.
Obviously, this business has seen it all pretty much. It's seen wars, depression, stock market crashes, all of that sort of thing. Now there's, I think I counted over 1,000 franchisees. What was the key to going from one or two franchises to 1,000?
Well, it didn't happen overnight, of course, and gradually, you know, we're talking a long period of time. We're coming out to our, over 30 years now since we moved interstate. So it's a long time. And every year more offices are joined and so forth. We've had to take some risks, and I think that's crucial in business. And that's paid off. Fantastic.
I think the family aspect of it was managed and run by the family, and that we went through the highs and lows together with these people as a family, and we managed it. We didn't have managers. We managed it. I think was a big impact, particularly with people to bring their family business to join ours. That was always, in my experience, a great sort of thing.
Given that both of you have seen a lot of businesses and characters come and go and some remain, what advice would you give now to someone that wanted to open a real estate business?
Join us.
The White family have been very good at keeping traditions throughout the generations. What do you think the secret to that has been?
First of all, if you love what you're doing, that's the biggest breakthrough you can possibly have. And I've never ever wanted to do anything else. It's a joy to see, well, certainly my children, I know Paul's got the same, my children relating to the history, the foundations, what this business stands for. And I have no question that if Ray saw them performing the way they do, he'd say, wow, we got chips off the old block.
Speaking of families, your wife, Rosie, was also involved in the business for a period of time.
My father laid claim to fame that he was the first person to employ a woman in real estate. Imagine that. Commence that today. And my wife was involved in our first training program. We didn't have a formal trainer, but we've she started, and others sort of took her, came as well. So it's certainly a family affair.
Let's talk about the future and leadership. Are leaders born or made?
Well, leaders definitely are made. And the trouble about being a born leader is that you have a confidence that you've got something special. You don't really understand what it is that, you've got some sort of knack. I've seen so many born leaders fail in business, whereas people who clearly are not a born leader, understanding what is required, they become far more effective.
Exactly. Has so many unlikely people turn into something extraordinary through training, experience, and support.
Speaking of training, I read somewhere that you go and spend a week at Harvard every year. What's one of the big lessons that you've enjoyed from learning from overseas educational institutions?
Oh, there's so many. I go there every year, sort of determined to come back with a couple of key principles. The biggest is having the awareness that you must keep attempting to improve. As soon as you think, well, it's up to other people to improve, but not me. I'm the owner of the business. I'm employing you to go and do all the hard things. I'm just going to be the that's hopeless. That's always, those lessons often need to be revisited. And it's very tempting to think you're there. My God, I've made it. And there's a phrase we use, if you're there, you're on the way back.
No, I agree with that. And I see it a lot in the industry. Companies have got complacent. And within a few years, they start the slippery slide, which is so hard to turn around.
Ray White has a culture of performance, or a culture of encouraging people to perform at their best. What are some of your tips for managing superstars.
You can still bring value to superstar. And a lot of business owners don't realise that they need to bring value to their people, not just be the boss. It's a terrible word, boss. I hate it. Even first-class salespeople can be better. And that can be a leader of a business providing better support systems. Good communication with those high performers always leads to new ideas that can be implemented.
What's the most important quality of a leader today?
I think it's commitment to the business and commitment to their people, you know, and the ability to bring people through. You know, one of the areas that is so important is that superstar or the really ambitious person does get the opportunity to, you know, sort of achieve their ambitions. Could be part owner, could be succession planning. All these sorts of things need to be there unless things stall and people just dissipate and go elsewhere because they can't see any future for them.
Both of you have children in the business, fourth generation white family, so Dan, Sam, Ben and Max. What do you wish for your sons as they carry on the Ray White name in the Ray White business?
I just wish they get the same joy and satisfaction that I've achieved. Full stop. Their plans are fantastic. They're chasing their dreams. The pride they have in what is there is huge, a massive asset.
If Ray were here now, looking at the business, what would he say to you both?
I often wonder about that, and I don't know. I have no idea. So I never wanted this business to become just a big brand all over the place. I wanted it to be, you know, nice, small and personal. What have you done? You don't quite know what he might say. I reckon he'd be a bit chuffed.
What would he say to the agents who have mindset coaches and stylists and 5 a.m. club to be successful?
Well, can I, a little story that was relayed to me when they're in the CML building in the city. And in those days, there was no air conditioning, the windows are open, and some wind blew, and things were sort of happening. And one of the guys said, "I have no business. I what should I do, Ray? You know?" And he said, "You put your hat on and you go and walk up and down Queen Street and you talk to people." And he did. And he came back and he apparently found a couple of people wanted to buy something, somebody wanted to sell something. Get back out there and talk to people.
To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe.